supplications and the du'as. So we have established the fact that this is the knowledge that we need to acquire, and this is the knowledge that perhaps we have acquired. Now, what do we do with this knowledge? Here, we must inform our heart of whatever we have understood from this knowledge, right? And for example, if there is some kind of knowledge or perhaps a secret that has been revealed to the individual, then they too must inform their heart, educate their heart. Now, what is interesting here is you might be thinking, well, what does educating the heart have to do with anything? So let's put it in kind of a little bit of an easier form to understand. The mind is the one that apparently acquires this knowledge. So you have all this knowledge in your mind. You know all these things. But when it comes to your heart, that is when you start to believe these things, right? So you teach your heart. You constantly explain to your heart. You constantly educate your heart on that things which have been learned and the knowledge that one has acquired. So for example, I know that the day of resurrection exists, but do I really believe deep down inside where? In my heart, that the day of resurrection exists or does not exist? So at this level, we begin to teach the heart, inform the heart, and educate the heart on all of these different things and all of this knowledge that we have acquired. And finally, very quickly, we talk about how this knowledge which we have acquired is then taught to the heart. The heart then believes in this knowledge that has been acquired. But finally, what does this have to do with our ubudiyya, our servitude, our worship, our obedience to Allah?
IRIB English Radio.
Our website is parstoday.com.
Well, when talking about what exactly is the connection and the relationship of these things with our ubudiyya, we find that, of course, the knowledge that we have acquired is still not put into practice, right? But it is just this knowledge that we have acquired. And then what happens is that the heart is taught and educated and is informed about this knowledge until the heart eventually begins to truly believe. Now, of course, there are different levels of belief as well, different grades, higher levels of belief and lower levels of belief. But regardless, we start to believe in that knowledge that we have acquired. Now, where does ubudiyya come into play? Of course, we can very loosely say that the acquiring of knowledge in itself is ubudiyya. Teaching the heart that knowledge which has been acquired is also ubudiyya. It is the servitude and obedience and worship to Allah. But what is interesting is once we have acquired the knowledge, then we have belief in this knowledge. This clearly translates into action. Now, this action that one does is where truly the ubudiyya comes into play. We believe in the resurrection day, so we start to act as if we believe in the resurrection day. We do good deeds. We refrain from doing evil deeds. We are honest and we are truthful and we give charity and we oppose oppressors. And likewise, we stay away from haram things or we refrain from backbiting. We refrain from lying or cheating or stealing money from other people and the like. Now, when this becomes a part of our action, this action is a higher level of ubudiyya. It is a higher level of servitude and worship and obedience to Allah, because now we reflect that knowledge of the Qur'an and the traditions of the Ahlul Bayt, peace and blessings upon them. That knowledge has now translated into belief, and that belief has translated into action. It is all a part and various stages of ubudiyya, our servitude, our worship, and our obedience to Allah. Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of Foresight. Don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.com. Until another episode and another great tip, fi amanillah, and God bless you all. أحتمي بحما حسبنا الله ونعم الوكيل نعم المولى ونعم النصير.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
This is
for a better life.
For a better life.
The Holy Prophet of Islam says, I have been sent to complete noble manners.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, my dear sisters and brothers from all around the world. I hope you're all doing well. You're here with me for a better life. I am Beta, a medical student that I'm really interested in Islamic topics, especially in ethicals and morals issues. And, you know, I lack knowledge, but I'm here to share my thoughts and my ideas with you. I wish you enjoy it. We're going to go through our topic of today's episode, and I'm going to start with some verses of a poem. Let's go. God has a gift, the gift of love, waiting to be unwrapped by each one of us. There is nothing on earth that fills the gap like the love God has for each woman and man. You may strive for wealth or aim for success, even find indulgent ways to seek happiness. All of this provides only moment of satisfaction. Inside of us is a hunger only God can satisfy. God shows us the meaning and purpose of life, guides us to the eternity, our souls to suffice. So, as you're aware, in the history of human being, there were always a strong desire to strengthen the bond with Allah and to answer the blessing of love He's offering to us. As you saw just in this poem, it was like, okay, as you know, God is so kind towards human beings, and He is always showing His love by our blessings, by different aspects in our lives, that if we are aware of them and if we open our eyes and our ears to this blessing, we would understand the love God is offering to us. But answering to this love that is offered by God to us is somehow something historical in the history of human being. So, as I told you, there were always a strong desire in human beings to, you know, just strengthen the bond with Allah and to answer this blessing. So, and if, you know, I'm going to go straightly to the point, worship is the key word in this topic and in this episode. You know, maybe this thought comes to your mind that apparently there is no relationship between worship and good morals, because we are here to talk about a better life. We are here to talk about ethicals and morals issues for a better life. But actually, there is a profound connection between these two areas. I mean, worship and morals. All right, now, I'm going to give you a break, so then we're going to come back and talk about this cliffhanger more and more. Stay tuned, dear listeners.
Please send any suggestion, any idea to our email, that is englishradio@irib.ir.
Welcome back. This is B10. You're listening to me for a better life. We're talking about the connection between worship and morals in day-to-day life. And I'm going to give you some examples of holy imams' way of living, so that could be more touchable for you and you will understand it clearer and better. And actually, this is my goal of today's episode. So, as I told you, you have to consider the connection and the relationship of prayer to morals. You know what? I'm going to recite a verse of Holy Quran for you. Ya ayyuhan nas, ubudu rabbakum alladhi khalaqakum walladhina min qablikum la'allakum tattaqun. O mankind, worship your Lord, who created you and those who were before you, so that you may be God-worthy. Surah Baqarah, verse 21st. You know, dear listeners, we're talking about worship and the connection of worship and morals. Worship has been mentioned many times in Holy Quran, and as you see, I just recited one of the verses of Quran, and it was a sign that, you know, one of the command that is recited to the people is worshiping God. So it means that there is a need in your soul, there is something deep in your heart that is asking for this worship, that is asking for an inner peace by means of worship. Worship means to obey, to submit to, you know, serve a being who is in complete control. Human beings have always worshipped. History tells us that people of the past built huge temples and worshipped many different gods. And you know, in this episode, I'm not going to talk about why people are eager to make something to worship it. You know what? But the thing is, these proofs all show us that there is a strong desire to worship something. Something which is superior to us. The soul finds somehow peace in it, and this affects the personality and behavior of the person. Whenever a natural need is not fulfilled and is overlooked or ignored, there is a big impact on human behavior. And here is the connection that I'm going to elaborate more. There is a strong connection between your needs and your behavior. When you have some special needs in yourself that are not answered because of many reasons, it feels like, okay, there is something missing in your personality and you have to fulfill it. And this desire to fulfill your needs will show itself in your behavior. Worship of God is the essential ingredient of inner peace, and inner peace is the root of good morals. Right now, we're going to go for a short break, and then we'll come back. Stay tuned, dear listeners.
We were given so many prizes. We bought and bought and couldn't stop buying. We gave charity to the poor because we couldn't stand the crying. We thought we paid our dues, but in fact, to ourselves, we're just lying. Oh, I'm walking with my head lowered for my race. Is it satisfied? Is Allah satisfied? Is Allah satisfied?
Welcome back. This is For a Better Life, and I'm here talking about the connection between worshiping and morals. As I told you, there is a strong bond between these two areas because you are searching for a kind of inner peace for yourself in your life. And when you don't have this inner peace, you cannot behave humanly. There are many categories of worshiping God. So first of all, there are different categories of this worshiping. The first one is merely performing worship in a mechanical way. That, you know, I bet you've experienced this kind of worship in your life, and it is impossible if you just tell me that, okay, I've never experienced such a thing, because you are a human and humans share a lot. The second category of worshiping is worship for show off. I bet you've experienced this so much in your life because, for example, myself, when I was younger at school, we had, you know, just prayers in groups, and it was like, okay, I wanted to be better. I wanted to show off my praying or something like that. The third category is worship with sincerity. It earns reward. Actually, when you worship, it has a special reward, but the thing which is superior to this physical reward is somehow the spiritual aura that you will find through this worship. And the last and the fourth category of worship is worship with divine realization or vijdan. You know, it creates a spiritual aura. The worshipper experiences such pleasure that, cannot obtain it in anything else in the world. It causes one to become more proximate to the Almighty, to the God, and to find herself or himself in an aura that can't be found anywhere else. And also, I want to mention that the worship of the holy imams was from this category, which is a superior level of worshiping. And right now, I'm going to tell you a story from Imam Ali alayhi salam. Imam Ali fasted most of the days and was busy in praying all night long, so much so that the neighbors report hearing 1,000 takbiratul ihram or Allahu Akbar in one night. Many times this condition became so serious that people just, you know, started to think that his soul has departed from him. Try to be sincere, just try to be pure, and just try to worship according to your vijdan. That's all the time we had for today's episode, dear listeners. I wish you enjoy our topic of today, worshiping. And I just leave you in a warm embrace of God. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Every grain of sand in every desert land, he knows. Every shade of palm, every closed hand, he knows. Every sparkling tear on every eyelash, he knows. Every thought I have and every word I share, he knows. Allah
in the limelight.
The data under advertising expenses of 25 major oil and gas producing companies, oil industry lobby groups, and pro-industry groups shows that They have started a huge advertising campaign to promote fossil fuels as much as possible since the candidacy of Joe Biden for U.S. presidency. Also, environmental activists and critics of these oil giants say that these companies deceptively are trying to show themselves as supporters of green energy with the help of large advertising lobbies. But behind the scenes, they're trying to confuse public opinion about the activities to achieve green and clean energy. We'll now take a look at some of the world media's coverage of this issue. Please stay with us. The British newspaper The Guardian writes, criticism in the US of the oil industry's obfuscation over the climate crisis is intensifying after internal documents showed companies attempted to distance themselves from agreed climate goals, admitted gaslighting the public over efforts to go green, and even wished critical activists be infested by bedbugs. The communications were unveiled as part of a congressional hearing held in Washington, D.C., where an investigation into the role of fossil fuels in driving the climate crisis produced documents obtained from the oil giants ExxonMobil, Chevron, Shell, and British Petroleum, BP. Varshini Prakash, executive director of Sunrise, said, "First they ignore you, then they laugh at you, then they wish bedbugs on you, then you win." The organization accused Shell of a legacy of violence and of ignoring the well-being of communities across the globe. The revelations are part of the third hearing held by the U.S. House Committee on Oversight and Reform on how the fossil fuel industry sought to hamper the effort to address the climate crisis. Democrats who lead the committee called top executives from the oil companies to testify last year, in which they denied they had misled the public. Richard Wiles, president of the Center for Climate Integrity, said the new documents are the latest evidence that oil giants keep lying about their commitments to help solve the climate crisis and should never be trusted by policymakers. Richard Wiles added, "If there is one thing consistent about the oil and gas majors' position on climate, it's their utter inability to tell the truth." Rohana, co-chair of the committee, said the new documents are explosive and show a culture of intense disrespect to climate activists. He said the oil giants' climate pledges rely on unproven technology, accounting gimmicks, and misleading language to hide the reality. "Big oil executives are laughing at the people trying to protect our planet while they knowingly work to destroy it." BalkanGreenEnergyNews.com explains more about the same story. The new influence map report shows that the five largest oil companies continue to disseminate disinformation to present themselves to the public as environmentally responsible companies, while at the same time lobbying the decision-makers for fossil fuels continuously. The report reveals a systematic mismatch between green public communication and lobbying activities. The Influence Map report reveals that the so-called big oil companies, that is BP, Shell, Chevron, ExxonMobil and Total Energies, are conducting a spread of disinformation to present an environmentally responsible public image while continuously lobbying governments and decision makers to ensure that countries remain locked on fossil fuels for decades to come. A new study shows that big oil companies spend hundreds of millions of dollars on climate-responsive messages to create a positive image in climate campaigns. However, companies continue to invest in oil and gas. According to the analysis, the forecasted oil production by big oil companies is not in line with the International Energy Agency's zero-emission plans for 2050, while several of these companies plan to expand oil and gas production through to 2026. Also, none of the oil majors lobbied for strengthening regulations for stricter methane emissions, despite the importance of methane mitigation being a key claim in the fossil fuel industry. Influence Map found that none of the companies have aligned their climate policy engagement activities with the goals of the Paris Climate Accord. The website carbonbrief.org sheds more light on the same issue. A new study says four of the world's largest oil and gas companies are failing to back their words and pledges on climate change with genuine action and genuine investment. Mentions of climate change and low-carbon energy have roughly tripled in annual reports from Chevron, from ExxonMobil, BP and Shell over the past decade. But even as these firms issue pledges to cut greenhouse gas emissions and invest in renewable energies, the study concludes that such a transition is simply not occurring, as all four companies continue to focus primarily on producing fossil fuels. The study, published in PLOS ONE, comes in the wake of record profits for fossil fuel industry as a global energy crisis bumps up oil and gas prices. In Britain, BP has argued against an additional windfall tax in response to the crisis, partly on the basis that it would hamper the firm's planned low-carbon investments. However, having analysed how the four companies' commitments align with their climate action and spending, the authors of the new study questioned the extent of these investments. The study concludes while their oil and gas production has remained consistently high, less than 1% of their capital investment went into low-carbon technology between 2010 and 2018. An expert who was not involved in the new research tells carbonbrief.org that it provides robust evidence that fossil fuel companies are not walking the talk when it comes to addressing climate change. Due to the use of their products, Chevron, ExxonMobil, BP and Shell are associated with globally significant shares of greenhouse gas emissions. By one estimate, they are responsible for more than one-tenth of all CO2 emissions that has been emitted since 1965. Amid growing societal and political pressures, these companies have started pledging to cut emissions, even committed to net zero emission targets, although in some cases only for their operations rather than their products. BP has said it intends to move away from oil to become an integrated energy company. However, previous studies have extensively documented how oil majors have spread misinformation about climate change, spent millions of dollars lobbying against climate measures, and shifted the blame for global warming onto consumers. The researchers write in their new study, "This historical behavior suggests that the authenticity of the company's climate commitments should be examined critically and exhaustively."
This is A to Z. An introduction into an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, faithfulness to the promise and covenant. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. In today's lesson, we will talk about the topic of being faithful to the promise in the Islamic lifestyle. We know that Islam gives importance to the justice, and therefore one of the necessities of justice is to be faithful to the promise. In the Quran, in chapter 5, verse 1, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has said clearly that, Ya ayyuha alladhina amanu, ufu bil uqud, or those who believed, be faithful to the covenant that you have made, to the promises and the covenants that you have made. And here, when we look at the word al-uqud in the Arabic language, we see that there is alif lam in the beginning, which tells us that this covers everything. This covers the covenant with the God. This covers the covenant amongst the people. It covers the covenant in the political field. It covers the covenant in the economical field. It covers the covenant in the defense, in the field of defense, in the social life, and so on. So it covers every single aspect of a person's life, even in different fields, with different people, with different entities, even with the God, that we must be faithful to the covenant that we have made. Therefore, it has a vast area that it covers, and it is necessary that we must be faithful. And therefore, we see that even in the Islamic economics, when we talk about the justice in the economics, to deal with the justice, the main thing is that we must be faithful to the covenants that we have made in order to apply the justice, in order to have trust amongst the people, in order to have dealing or to do trade. It all depends on the trust, and the trust comes with faithfulness of the covenant. Welcome back. You're listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. We were talking about the topic of being faithful to the promise or covenant. It is necessary in Islam to be faithful, because the main theme of Islam is justice. And we said that in the Quran, Allah has clearly said that be faithful to the promises or covenants that you have made. Especially in the economical field, we know that if we want to have trust amongst the people, if we want to have the trust and the nobility amongst the people, it is necessary to be faithful to the promises that we are making. Even in the political field, we see that if someone wants the votes and he makes some promises in order to get some vote from the public, in order to become a minister, maybe the prime minister or the president, and if he does not fulfill the promises that he has made, the covenants that he had made, if he cannot fulfill that, people never trust. They obviously stand against such a person. Therefore, it is necessary to fulfill. On the other hand, in the Islamic teachings, when we look at the sayings of the Prophet, we see that the Prophet has clearly said that la deena liman la ahdala, that the person who does not fulfill his promises, the one who is not faithful to the promises and covenants, la deena lahu, there is no religion for him. He is not a religious person. Therefore, one of the signs of someone being religious, one of the signs, you know, the person who is known as religious is not by just praying 5-time prayers. It's not just by fasting or having beard or maybe wearing hijab. The Prophet is saying that the one who is faithful to the promise, he is a religious person. And if there is someone who apparently looks religious, but he never fulfills his promises, there is no deen for such a person. Thanks for listening. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Thanks for listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. For more information, visit our website at parstoday.com/en call of Islam page. Till another episode, God bless you all. والسلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته.
What about you? IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
Acts of violence and vandalism by Israeli settlers targeting Palestinian properties are routine in the West Bank throughout the year. Reports of acts of violence and vandalism against Palestinians are also rarely prosecuted by the Zionist regime forces. Olive trees are an indispensable source of revenue for many Palestinians, particularly in the West Bank, and acts of vandalism are a deliberate attempt to stifle their means of income. In this regard, we have taken a look at some world media websites for further details. Stay tuned for more. In this regard, Palestine Chronicle wrote, "The olive harvest season in Palestine has started. For Palestinians, the olive harvest is not just important for the local economy, but is a national event expressing unity, social cohesion, and defiance of the Israeli regime occupation. The Zionist regime often erases ancient olive groves in the occupied Palestinian territories to build illegal Jewish settlements, confiscate Palestinian land for whatever military purpose, or simply break the spirit of ordinary Palestinians. This is why the olive harvest is an important Palestinian occasion to send a message back to the Zionist regime that the relationship with their land is as strong as ever." Meanwhile, the website of the Electronic Intifada on the Zionist regime's settlers' attacks on Palestinian farmers wrote, "Feroz Youssef is taking all the precautions he can to fend off ever more aggressive settler attacks on his land west of Salfit in the occupied West Bank. The farmer 37 has already seen his land, 30,000 square meters outside the town of Azavia, divided into two, by Israeli regime's separation wall, where it dips deep into the West Bank, southwest of Nablus, in the Salfit Governorate. Never peaceful settlers from the nearby settlements of Ariel, Alei Zahav, Pudul and Barkan have been acting even more aggressively over the past several months. Last year, according to the UN, Palestinians in the West Bank had to endure the highest recorded levels of settler violence in recent years. Fearing for his safety as well as his livelihood, Youssef has constructed a wooden hut on top of one of his bigger olive trees. The hut is about 5 meters squared and is built on the tree trunk, some 3 meters up. It is outfitted with plastic windows and boasts a sheet metal roof. A single solar panel provides electricity. Inside, there are chairs, covers, and bedding, enabling Youssef to stay overnight on his land. This serves two purposes. He can keep an eye on his land at night, and he is not subject to the capricious moods of Israeli troops at checkpoints to reach his land in the mornings. Youssef is by no means the only farmer to come up with this idea. He estimates that around 230 other local farmers have built huts on their lands for the same purpose. He fears, however, that the Israeli military might come and destroy the hut, as has happened to others. Settlers are wreaking havoc in small communities around the West Bank. Hardly a day goes by without some reports of cars being vandalized, civilians being assaulted, or trees being targeted. There are more than 280 settlements in the West Bank, outside of East Al-Quds. These are home to some 440,000 settlers, lured there by tax breaks and other financial incentives offered by the Zionist regime. Some 150 of these are so-called settlement outposts, attracting more extreme elements among the settlers. Some of these outposts are being legalized to become full settlements. A third of the outposts were established over the last decade. All pose a threat to the security of Palestinians in the vicinity, and the Zionist regime military is another source of danger for farmers and others. At least 26 children have been killed by troops or settlers this year alone. Most settler attacks take place in Area C. Some 60% of the occupied West Bank, which is under direct Israeli regime military and administrative control. Youssef Farm is in Area C, where the Zionist regime apartheid system is quite brazen. Israeli settlers are treated as civilians under Israeli law, while Palestinians like Youssef in the same area are subject to military rule. There is little to no protection for Palestinians in Area C or anywhere else. The military does not have the authority to intervene against settlers since they are seen as civilians. It is a fine distinction that B'Tselem, an Israeli human rights group, calls meaningless. Settler violence, the group holds, is a form of government policy, and troops almost never have to face any consequences for their actions. According to another Israeli rights group, Yesh Din, in the years 2019 and 2020, the Zionist regime military received a total of 273 complaints related to violations committed by troops against Palestinian civilians. Of these complaints, just 56 investigations were opened, or about a fifth of all complaints submitted. Yesh Din attributed the small number of opened investigations, a number that is decreasing year on year, to a deliberate policy to raise the threshold for opening criminal investigations. Ultimately, the group found only 2% of complaints resulted in prosecution. Ahmad Al Mahmoud, 66, from Kafar Al Dik, further west from Salfit, suffers constant vandalism by settlers from the nearby Alizahaf settlement, to which he has already lost 6,000 square meters of his 13,000 square meters of land, now surrounded by a metal fence and off-limits to him. Murad Shatvi, head of the Colonization and Wall Resistance Commission of the Northern West Bank and a coordinator for unarmed resistance marches, told the Electronic Intifada that settlements have led to the confiscation of thousands of dunams of agricultural land in the Salfit Governorate. The entire area of the governorate is about 26,000 dunams, Shatvi said, with 11,000 located in Area A and under the Palestinian Authority, and 15,000 dunams are in Area C. A dunam is equivalent of 1,000 square meters. Salfit Governorate contains 25 Israeli settlements, Shatvi added, the largest of which is Ariel, which is built on land belonging to the villages of the area, including Kafar al-Dik and al-Zawiya. The most dangerous settlement project in Salfit is the occupation's attempt to expand the Ariel settlement by establishing an industrial zone there and linking it to a settlement that is being planned in the Ras area and Khalat Hassan area west of Salfit. Ahmad al-Mahmoud also built a hut on his land. In fact, it was built several times because the Israeli regime military kept demolishing it. The latest demolition was in September 2020. He rebuilt it less than 2 months later. Today, the hut is multifunctional, including as a recreational place for his family and grandchildren. Settler attacks increase more during the harvest seasons, al-Mahmoud told the Electronic Intifada, adding, especially the olive harvest. Settler gangs prepare themselves for the September-November harvest by cutting down olive trees and stealing their fruits. And it is not just Palestinians who are targets. Settlers have been known to target foreign and Israeli activists when these have turned up to protect farmers for the harvest, pelting them with stones or assaulting them with clubs. Al-Mahmoud does not only have to contend with direct assaults, he told the Electronic Intifada. When the Zionist regime in administrative control over the area, he has yet to receive permission to dig a water well for irrigation purposes. He still has to rely on trucks carrying water tanks to irrigate his trees once a week.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
Virtues of the Believers, Friday the 3rd of Ramadan, 1394, the 20th of September, 1974. If God wishes to grant forgiveness to someone, this means healing the wound he inflicted on his own soul through sinning. So these true believers are those whose spiritual wounds God will heal, forgiveness and a noble provision. They shall have a provision without any abasement or humiliation, without any difficulty or grief. This is the kind of provision God will grant them. Whenever a faithful society comes into being, I am not talking about an individual, so do not say, "Thank God we have a morsel of bread to eat, so we are okay. We have no grief." Because when you really examine such a person's behavior, you see it is all misfortune and mistreatment of others. They do degrading work and they don't even see that what they do is degrading, or that this morsel of bread they have is a morsel of humiliation. I'm talking about a society. When a society's morsel of bread is clean, when it is noble, when it is earned with dignity, this is when its provision is noble and distinguished. And this happens when a society is truly faithful and displays the qualities I am describing. If this was the case, all of the slogans that political parties in the world today are loudly proclaiming from every quarter to every people, whether truly or falsely, in order to win votes, all of these slogans and promises could be achieved in a truly faithful society. Peace, freedom, prosperity, and ease, achieved without war, without bloodshed, through fraternity, through friendship, a high level of culture, a high level of prosperity, and a high level of living, all of these slogans and mottos, some of which are meaningful, others of which are meaningless, all of them would be actually achieved in a faithful society and a noble provision.
دنیای اسلام یک نسخه امروز دارد و اون اتحاد.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
Faith based on understanding. Saturday, the 4th of Ramadan, 1394, 21st of September, 1974. Indeed, in the creation of the heavens and the earth and the alternation of night and day, there are signs for those who possess intellect. Those who remember Allah standing, sitting, and lying on their sides, and reflect on the creation of the heavens and the earth, and say, "Our Lord, you have not created this in vain. Immaculate are you. Save us from the punishment of the fire." Surah Ali Imran, Surah number 3, verses 190 and 191. Today we will look at a few more verses on the topic of faith. There are a few points we must consider. Firstly, faith is one of the foremost qualities of God's prophets and the true believers who follow them. They have faith in their own message. This is the difference between divine leaders and the political leaders of today's world.
Allah, I wanna thank you. I wanna thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope. Oh Allah, I wanna thank you. I wanna thank you for all the things that you've done.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pereza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Alami, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
Another Palestinian young man seen by many as a hero and an icon has been killed by Israeli forces during a confrontation in the occupied West Bank. For more than 10 days, the regime's forces had been carrying out a manhunt for Uday Tamimi after he shot at an Israeli military checkpoint at the entrance to his hometown, the Shafat refugee camp in Al-Quds. On Wednesday night, he was gunned down during clashes with Israeli forces at the entrance of an illegal settlement in eastern Al-Quds called Ma'ale Adumim. Hearing a call from Palestinian factions, a general strike has been held in Al-Quds and throughout the occupied West Bank to mourn at Tamimi. The walkout affected all public institutions and private sectors, including schools and businesses. Public transportation was also shut down during the strike.
The general strike prevailing today in the occupied territories is a political message that the Palestinian people are standing behind the resistance option and to assert that they are following the footprints of the martyrs until victory and freedom. It's a message that the Palestinian people will not stand with their hands cuffed in front of the Israeli crimes and that they have the right to resist the occupiers.
Palestinian resistance factions have also urged Palestinians to take to the streets to denounce At-Tamimi's killing and the aggression by the Israeli regime. Sporadic protests also erupted in several areas of the West Bank. Protesters said they would offer as many martyrs for the sake of Palestine's freedom while fighting the Israeli occupation. They added that more action is required to respond to Israeli atrocities.
We are united as Palestinian people. We continue to prove that we have a strength to sacrifice our souls. We are ready to go to direct confrontations to resist the Israeli forces. We stand united behind the resistance, behind the confrontations, behind the martyrs.
Israel's escalating repression during the last month is part of a larger operation to quell the growing Palestinian resistance, particularly armed resistance. Recently, many Palestinian youths are drawn to this kind of resistance, with the newly formed group of fighters known as the Lion's Den as an example. Many might question whether a new uprising against Israel is in the making here in the occupied West Bank and Al-Quds. While the Israeli military is escalating its crackdown against Palestinians and using excessive force to counter the Palestinian resistance, it's obvious that Tel Aviv fears a renewed surge in anti-Israeli operations, especially after a rise in armed attacks against the Israeli regime. Mona Qandil, Occupied Al-Bira.
Britain has been thrown into another leadership crisis after outgoing Prime Minister Liz Truss announced her resignation after just 44 days in office. Her departure makes Truss the shortest-serving UK Prime Minister in British history and the fourth Tory to head the troubled nation in just 4 years.
I cannot deliver the mandate on which I was elected by the Conservative Party. I have therefore spoken to His Majesty the King to notify him that I am resigning as leader of the Conservative Party.
So now eyes turn towards who her successor will be. The ruling Conservative Party have chosen to ignore opposition calls for a general election.
This cannot continue. Britain deserves better. Britain cannot afford the chaos of the Conservatives anymore. We need a general election now.
The next Prime Minister is expected to be elected via another internal leadership race within the space of just 1 week. Speculation suggests that past leadership contenders Rishi Sunak and Penny Mordaunt both have their eye on the top job, whilst current Chancellor Jeremy Hunt has ruled himself out of the race. Former Prime Minister Boris Johnson has stunned many with rumours he may attempt to return. Truss's allies claim she stood aside graciously. However, critics believe she should be held accountable for her self-admitted mistakes.
Liz Truss leaving after just 44 days in power really epitomises the state of the current Conservative Party. Because think about it, if after 12 years of power, yet another Conservative Prime Minister is chased out after being unable to clean up the mess that their party created, well, what does it say about any other potential leadership candidate?
Going forward, it's expected things are going to move very rapidly, with Tory MPs expected to put forward their nominations on Monday, with an election process concluded by